This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Can't get enough of the Fan in the Morning?
Shown up.
Because this is nothing like that.
Working.
Al and Jerry are here with stories they'd never get to cover on the morning show.
Very sexy robot.
Hey, look at that pig.
Shenanigans.
Naked yoga.
My mother had a bad experience with these goats.
Let's hump the fence.
It's Al and Jerry's post-game podcast.
All right, here we go on the podcast on a Wednesday. Eddie, what's up, man?
Hello, podcast people.
What do you got?
What do I have?
This is usually where Al comes up with the topics.
Yes. I did watch that Neil deGrasse Tyson dog evolution
thing. Did you really?
Yes, and it was lifted from his redo of the Cosmos series. So it was a short little thing, but
okay.
It was interesting. And it led me to some other interesting things.
On YouTube. Where this was?
Yes.
This was on YouTube. Mm-hmm. I was perusing YouTube yesterday. It is the most fascinating thing I've ever seen with the algorithms, as they say, and the crap that pops up. So listen to this theory, and I know you don't like golf, but I couldn't believe what I was watching.
Mm-hmm.
So because my younger son is hooked beyond hooked on the game, that's all he watches now is YouTube golf. We know the way Gio watches it.
Mm-hmm.
My wife knows who these golfers are now. It's pretty crazy. So there was one guy that popped up. It's called the Random Golf Club. I think that's the name of his channel, I think. And I've never heard of him. Don't know who he is. So I'm like, oh, let's pop this up. What's this look? Because I think the title in the show was like 30 golf courses in 30 days or 30 rounds in 30 days. I'm like, damn. I'm like, how the hell do you do that with a job? Well, it turns out this is his job.
Okay.
As we found out. This is the theory, which I cannot believe golf courses allow, and yet they do. It's what they call a meetup. So he puts it out there on his social media for any of his quote-unquote followers and golfers to meet up at a specific golf course at a specific time. And then they have a multiple-person scramble, meaning everybody plays and you take the best score.
Mm-hmm.
They have like 50 people that show up. And in some cases, 150 people. And they're all playing the same holes together. You have to see the video of a mob scene of people with bags on their backs walking down fairways. And they take the best tee shot, and then everyone drops, and everyone's hitting. I want to know how someone hasn't gotten killed, number one. Then number two, the fact that these courses allow them to even finish rounds in the dark using cell phone. It's unbelievable to me.
That's got to take forever.
It does, actually. That's what I thought. He said it takes 2.5 hours to play nine holes.
Oh, nine. They're only playing nine?
They play nine, yeah. And so in this specific video I was watching, they started in Michigan, I believe. They wound up playing. They wound up playing Bethpage Black, but only three. They couldn't do that at Bethpage Black. I guess I don't know if they wouldn't allow it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess then they played off the Pelham Parkway. Does that sound right? He says the oldest public course in the country, where there were, I mean, so many people. Then they went out to New Jersey. Then they were they were all over the place. And the amount of people that follow and play is unbelievable to me.
And does he play for free because of the
publicity?
I don't know.
Eddie, I have no idea. Even all these YouTube golfers that Gio watches, I don't know if they get it complimentary because you're mentioning their club and you are getting 400,000 and 500,000 views to the video, so now they see blah, blah, blah country club. I don't know. I really don't know.
But these exclusive clubs, they wouldn't care, wouldn't need you.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know that I've seen exclusive clubs. There might be some private country clubs in that will still allow you, but like, I don't think you're going to see anybody playing Augusta National for YouTube. Mm-hmm. I don't think. I could be wrong. But it was very interesting. So I turned 50 yesterday.
Uh-huh.
Here's my question to you. It has nothing to do about birthdays. It has more so to do with... My mom called me yesterday to wish me a happy birthday, and she said, I don't know where it's hard to believe that it's 50 years. And I could sense like almost a, not depression, but almost a sadness twinge in her voice. And I don't feel like I'm anywhere near the end of my life or anything like that. But 50. At what point did you sit there and look in the mirror and be like, Christ, when did this happen?
Yeah. It was probably late 40s.
Okay.
Not a specific number. But yeah, I'm like, oh, okay, here we go. This is what it is. And
based on what, though? Just the way you looked or the way you felt?
No, felt. Okay. Felt. You know, when like the arthritis was, was, you know, kicking in and it's just, you know, harder to get going.
For sure.
And yeah, so it was more the arthritis than anything else and the pain involved in that and the time it takes my knees to sort of loosen up and all that stuff.
And you do, I mean, I know that I understand the diabetes, but do you take medication for other stuff or is that it?
Yeah.
Well, you do?
The autoimmune cascade, as they call it, once you get one autoimmune disease like type 1 diabetes, it will almost always lead to others kicking in. So the next thing for me was my thyroid disease. So I have to take Synthroid. I have to take insulin for the to replace my pancreas. I have to take Synthroid to replace my thyroid, and then just normal age stuff. I take a prostate med. And then I also, for the psoriatic arthritis, I take a shot every 12 weeks to help with that, to sort of, it doesn't fix it. It just sort of slows down the progress of like the degradation of my knee joints and other joints. So yeah, I'm on a bunch of meds.
See, maybe for me, like, I don't look in the mirror yet. I mean, I see weight gain, but I don't feel like I haven't got to that point yet. And I think partly because I don't take any medication still, never really have. So that's a good thing, I think. And also, I think the fact that I had such severe back issues in my early 30s and mid 30s,
I really remember, actually
through my 30s, to be quite honest. And yet, in the last 5 years, it's gone the other way. Aside from last December, or not, meaning a year and 4 months ago, not 4 months ago, where I went and I had a slipped disc is what it was. But when the doctor was looking at x-rays from when I was 35 to 49 or 48, and he asked me if it was the same, if they were mine, because the stenosis I had looked like it almost repaired itself, which he was puzzled. He's like, is this yours? I'm like, well, yeah, it's mine. So I think because I had those issues and it didn't deteriorate, actually has gotten better.
And but that's unusual from what the doctor is saying?
I have no idea. He asked me three times, are you sure you're giving me the right x-ray from 13 years ago? Because this looks a lot better than this. The one issue that I do have that where I see the difference in the age is the energy. I struggle during the weekends. I am fine. I know it's the sleep. I get it. But weekends, I'm fine. I go to bed at 10:30, 11 o'clock. I set my alarm for 7. I'm usually up by 6:30. And I'm ready to go. And I am good all day. And the same thing on Sunday. And Fridays I'm good because it's Friday. I will tell you, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, like yesterday, my plan was to, since it was my birthday, no one was home. I'm like, I'm not going to sit around and do nothing. I want to go do something. So I fully anticipated going down to Colts Neck and playing golf. There was a million tee times available because no one was playing. And I'm driving home. I couldn't keep my eyes open. I'm like, all right, no big deal. I'll go home. I'll take a 30-minute nap and I'll get in the car and I'll go. I took a 30-minute nap. I couldn't get going. Like I was just shot all day. And I probably snapped out of it at like 3:30. But in that moment, I made the decision. I'm like, you know, I'm going to sleep instead. And I slept good the night before. And that sucks.
Yeah.
You know, the energy, that's a problem.
Yeah, I'm going to attribute it to our damn schedule. Now, granted, we're getting older and all. But this our schedule is brutal.
No, I know it
and
is.
It's unnatural. And you know, and I probably do the best of all of us cause I, you know, no kids and I'm pretty good about getting to sleep before 6 PM.
Right.
But still it is, an unnatural sleep schedule.
It's a grind.
and for your, you know, whatever, body rhythms and all that other stuff. And then the weekend, you, like you, sort of get back to normal, and then it starts all over again.
Yeah, no, it does. So, and you know what? I'm lying. Now that I'm talking actually to you, I did not sleep good Monday night because I had cornhole.
Mm-hmm.
And I go to bed till 11 o'clock, actually.
Yeah, it was a special.
I slept 11 to 3.
Yeah, and not good.
No, that's probably, not probably, that's part of it, too. But on a, that said, on a regular basis, my energy midweek, if I don't keep going, once I sit down, dead. Can't keep my eyes open.
Yeah.
And I have no energy to do anything. Like, I think with my older son, he would come home from school. I would be out shooting hoops with him every day. Throw the baseball. I don't remember napping or ever watching TV. Now that he's my younger son's going to be 14, so it's not like he's a little boy
right.
anymore. But I did not do. I coached him more, and I was around him as much, but I didn't do as much with him outside like I did with Matthew. I just didn't. You know, did a lot. I'm not going to say I didn't, but it was every day with him. Maybe because Matthew was an only child at the time, I felt bad. I don't know. I just don't have the energy to do it. It's weird.
Yeah, well, it's just part of, that's just the way things are.
I know. But so that's the only feeling I have.
Unless you want to start going with, you know, testosterone shots and all that other stuff.
No, I mean, that could be. I mean, I the one thing I do know is in terms of the weight gain, there's no question my metabolism has slowed down considerably. You know, for whatever reason, I track my calories. My calorie count is pretty low most days. I gain weight.
Under 2,000.
My goal is 1,550.
And you're not an energy drink guy, right?
No.
Yeah.
No, I'm usually two cups of coffee a day.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. One on the way in and then another one during the course of the morning, and that's it.
And you know, we laugh when Boomer is yawning during the show and all. But my God, at his age, I mean, and granted, he is a professional athlete, mm-hmm. so he has a genetic advantage over us in that regard. But his energy is remarkable
mm-hmm.
at his age. Not that it's, you know, he's not 80, but
he
still.
He does have the, you're right, I'm not taking anything away. He does have the benefit of getting in significantly later than we do.
Yes.
I mean, you're here at 3 o'clock. I'm here usually by a quarter to 4. Mm-hmm. Al's here by 4. Because we really have to be ready to go on at 5.
Yes.
And in my case, I start taping for 8:80 at 4:30.
Right.
So I can't get here later than I do. Leaving the house for me at 3 as opposed to, say, 4:30 is a huge difference.
Sure.
Huge difference.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for this goddamn Holland Tunnel with the construction, this week where I'm hosting, I wouldn't get here at 4 o'clock. I'd get here at 5:30.
Right.
But I can't get caught in the stupid tunnel.
Yes. When they're picking up the cones.
Right. And so it's kind of is what it is, and I'm here when I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
Last thing for you.
Oh,
I saw this on MSN. I forget, whatever the, I think it's the Microsoft home screen on my computer, on my laptop at home. They always have space stories, always. And the one that caught me was the, not proof, but the belief and why Stephen Hawking believes there's aliens in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what he calls the dark forest theory. Are you familiar with this?
No.
So the dark forest theory, which I just read about yesterday, is that the galaxy is so vast that there is a belief that there are not just one or two, but there are multiple planets that probably house some sort of alien life.
Mm-hmm.
That even by the numbers, it statistically is probable that
right.
there's alien life, although there's still no proof. And the theory being, we've never had the technology to reach out. Like all of a sudden, we're trying to reach out constantly now.
Well, that started in the 70s with the SETI project.
Yeah, but now we're really looking for aliens.
Yes.
And the theory being, it's like, don't wake a sleeping giant. Like, they're probably afraid of us as much as we're afraid of them, but they have no interest in coming to find us, but now it's almost like poking the bear.
Mm-hmm.
And he believes if aliens come, it will only be because we're annoying them, essentially, is what the theory is.
And I know he's passed, Stephen Hawking, but his big concern was that if you look at the history of when, you know, humans went to a new area, it never really worked out for the indigenous peoples and plant life and animal life. It was kind of a destruction mm-hmm. and a replacement. And that if you want to invite a, you know, alien civilization in, it might not go well for us.
Might be destruction.
Right. But the other thing is any, because there's no life in our immediate stellar neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about light years of distance.
Right.
Tens of light years, most likely, at least. So any civilization, any being that could invent the means to get here quickly, if they wanted to, and if they knew about us, and if they, or maybe they already know about us, they could just wipe us out anytime they wanted. If they have that level of technology to get here,
and that, intelligence, right?
Yes. And are, whatever, 1,000 years ahead of us, 1,000,000 years ahead of us in terms of, which is nothing in terms of the, universal time scales, that they, if they wanted to, we would be just gone anyway. So I disagree with his theory on that. But if there's another civilization out there that's sort of on par with us, at the same level as us, then it could be an issue. But that is so many years away from us at this point because we're nowhere near being able to travel at the speed of light or faster than the speed of light, which would take to be able to just like, oh, I want to go over to Alpha Centauri. So,
or we can't even get to Mars yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Essentially.
So, you're talking about developing faster than light travel, much less light travel, light speed travel.
And I lied. There was one more thing. Mm-hmm. The podcast you did with Al last week when I was away.
Which one?
Did you do two?
No, actually.
But there was one.
It was just one.
Well, whatever. When you guys were talking about the music.
Oh, yes.
The Kings. I tell you, I knew Al knew music. Your recall of albums and songs, pretty impressive.
Yeah, for what I paid attention to.
Yeah,
like, I'm
know
beyond that now.
I know. And I know you don't really listen to today's music. Mm-hmm. And I know you're kind of... you like what you like from this, and that's great to me. Mm-hmm. I can't move past the 90s the way you don't really move past the 70s for the most mm-hmm. part. I mean, there's some things I do like, but the majority of what I listen to is still 90s and early 2000s music. I was left quite impressed. That was the podcast I got your clip from.
Oh, yes, yeah.
About the YouTube stuff.
Yeah.
I was on the turnpike listening. I'm like, damn, listen to Eddie.
Yeah.
It was pretty good. It wasn't just like you knew of bands. You knew the albums, the names of songs. It was pretty good.
Yeah. Well, I don't get a chance to or feel the need to flex, but hey.
You flexed.
It's there.
You flexed.
Now, I want to circle back to the beginning of the podcast with the people, 100
yeah.
people golfing. I have to imagine that with that many people golfing and it's a scramble, that they must shoot par
they do.
Every time.
I think he said on average they go a couple under par.
I would believe it,
for
sure.
For the nine, because the one thing they showed in a lot of the clips were a lot of guys will chip in for birdies because there's so many people.
Right.
Just by, again, the statistical probability of someone putting the ball in out of 100, it's going to happen.
Correct. Even if you have a bunch of guys who are, shoot 90 to 100.
Yeah.
One, if you've got 50 people, one of them's going to hit a good one. So I imagine
no
they're par or under all the time.
And then you got 100 people that can putt.
Right.
And so he said, I think he said average was 2 or 3 under for the 9 holes almost every time they go out.
Yeah, I would believe it. Okay. I just thought that would be the case. I just wanted to confirm it.
I really am. I've gotten to the point. So when I was, when I first started anchoring full time, with Joe, I was really on the fence of, do I want to continue this broadcasting thing or do I want to, I didn't have kids yet. Did I have kids? No, not yet. So we're talking like 2001, 2003. We didn't have kids yet. And I was on the fence of, do I want to keep up this radio thing and see where it takes me? Or do I want to try and go to golf school and become a teaching pro? Because at that point I was really into golf. I was playing 4 to 6 times a week. I belonged to a club. We didn't have kids, so we had a lot of disposable money that I probably should have saved, but I used it there. And I looked into it, ultimately decided I'm going to give this radio thing a try. And having kids wasn't happening at that time. So I thought, if this doesn't work in a couple of years, I can circle back. Well, you fast forward, we have kids. I stopped playing golf once when Matthew was born. I stopped playing almost entirely. From 2004 until like 3 years ago, I would venture to say I played 20 rounds of golf in those 17 years. Like, I did not play at all. Just an outing here or there, or around with my dad here or there. But because of sports and travel and just being a dad, I felt there was no way I was going to leave my son home on a Saturday to go play. I just...
Like Gio does.
So anyway.
Hello.
Whatever. Now, I have come back to that person because of, really, it started a couple of years ago, but last spring it really picked up when Matthew's, you know, high school season, baseball season ended, and he decided he wanted to start playing golf instead of baseball. He asked me to go a few times as opposed to him just going with his friends, and that turned into my younger son playing, really catching the bug, and now I'm back to playing. I would venture to say I'll play 4 to 6 times a week again, starting soon. I love it again. I'm back to that person. Not that I want to be a coach or anything. I couldn't at this point. But like, I want to like a golf career. But I don't know what to do. And I watch all these YouTube guys thinking, how the hell did I not think of any of this over the last few years? I didn't know this stuff was around. And now it's too late.
Yes.
You can't go start a YouTube channel with golf and make any money because these guys have done it first. Yeah. But it's like jealous is not the right word. Angry at myself for not coming up with some sort of a concept like that. Because I would love to, for the next phase of my life, because at some point they're going to fire me here. I mean, I've been around a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what I want to do. I just don't know what to do.
Well, I would say you to sort of make a dent now in the YouTube, you would need a hook that is.
Oh, for sure. Different.
Like, and I don't know if this is out there or not, but like, to get a big enough celebrity to do the channel with you.
I'm Boomer Esiason.
Or something like that. Right. You know, or whoever. You have some, not like his contacts, but you have some contacts.
Sure.
Or maybe through him. Anybody that's, you know, has the time would be interested in partnering up, and you know, that's what you would need, I would think, to sort of make an impact.
Well, a lot of them did make impacts by having people on, but it really was more just time and just building it. It's like I told Al when he did that nutritional channel. I don't know if you ever saw it.
No.
He did it well, but he gave up on it after like 3 months. Mm-hmm. And he's even acknowledged he made a mistake. Like, that, it takes time to actually build an audience to where people are going to subscribe and watch. And once you got them, you got them.
Right.
And he was doing a good job with that, and he quit on it way too soon, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing with a lot of these people. They start out with nothing. Next thing you know, they go, Eddie, not only do they have subscribers where they make money from YouTube for the advertising that gets put in it, they have sponsors like Callaway, TaylorMade. It blows my mind. It really does. It's phenomenal.
And they also, I'm sure almost all of them have some personality trait that draws people to them. Just like, you know, you have to like the person that you're watching do this stuff.
So that's always, as you've heard on the podcast, that's always my take on radio. You know, Al's trying to solve radio.
Right.
To me, it's not the topics.
Nope.
Doesn't matter if you have a guest or you don't have a guest. If you like who you're listening to, you will listen to whatever they're talking about.
Correct.
It's not guests don't turn people off. It's the hosts turn people off.
Right.
And in my opinion.
Like Mike and the Mad Dog doing movie reviews. People loved it.
I was never, if you were I wasn't a Giant or a Jet fan, yet every Monday at 1 o'clock, I put Mike and Chris on listening about the Giants and the Jets. And I was the type of listener where I couldn't wait for them to go around the league at 4 o'clock where they would get to the Cowboys for 3 minutes.
And I'm not a big NBA fan. Love the 45-minute Hubie Brown.
Yes. Interviews. Like, interviews to me, they do have value.
And I'm not an Oscars watcher, but when they had Jeffrey Lyons,
it was fun.
It was great.
I agree. So I think that, akin to what you're talking about with YouTube, is very true. You got to have personalities people like.
Yeah. And one more question. At your peak, were you ever scratch golfer?
No. I got my lowest handicap, I believe, was 13.1.
Oh, and, but to say, be a teacher or a pro, you got to be scratch,
well, you go
I would
to
think.
You go to golf school.
Oh, okay.
And the I think you have to be, I don't know this, I don't remember, but if I remember from back in the day, I think you had to have a handicap of less than 10, I believe was the number. So I wasn't that far off, and I thought if I went to golf school that, yeah, it was in North Carolina, the one I was looking at. You go for like a month or two or whatever. And I figured, yeah, I mean, a couple of tweaks, I can shave a few shots off my game. And I thought I could get there. I was trending in the right direction. But no, I was not that good. I've never been that good.
Okay.
So, but I love it. And I love walking. I don't like riding in a cart.
Mm-hmm.
I love everything about it. On a nice day, having a drink,
sure,
walking the course, playing the game. You know, it's just, it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm back to that kid again.
All right.
So, all right. Well, thank you for sitting in.
Very good.
Al will be back tomorrow or no?
Yes.
Okay. All right. This is the warm-up show with CeeLo and Fliegelman. That's coming up.
Which was hardcore sports talk.
I'm sure it was.
But they did a good job with the topics, I thought.
I'm sure they did. I was listening to other stuff, like press conferences
understand.
And watching highlights, but yes.
Okay.
You do the see ya, and we will catch you guys tomorrow.
See
ya!
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Here we go. First pitch time, 8:31. And Jeter swings. It's a high drive to left. It is high. It is far. It is gone. Derek Jeter hits a first ball fastball deep in the bleachers in left field. And on the first pitch of the game, the Yankees take a 1-0 lead.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Good morning, campers.
Al and Jerry. Don't worry, it's only an hour long, and most days it doesn't suck.
Except neither of them are here. Happy Wednesday, home day. I would love me to do my best Al Dukes impression. Well, hi, good morning. If I'm talking, that means Jerry's not here. Well, he is actually here. He's out in the newsroom. He's preparing to co-host with Boomer this morning. But Al's not here either. That means you got CeeLo and the great Mike Fliegelman who joins me this morning. Good morning, pal.
Good morning, CeeLo. And yeah, no, Jerry's out there. I see him working hard. Al's not here, which is why I'm here a couple hours later than usual. And C-Mac doesn't, you'd think he would notice that his producer was missing for his entire five-hour show.
Maybe, but he figured you just took a day off.
Well, and we talked about it. He just walked by and saw me through the glass and gave me like one of those, like you can see the realization on somebody's face when they know they messed
in.
Up.
Right. Yeah. Just as the close of his show, as he's, oh, it's Alan CeeLo. Nope, not so much. Mike Fliegelman. Yes, indeed. And I'll tell you what, much to my surprise, because as Jerry sat down in his chair about 45 minutes ago, he said, by the way, you know you're doing the warm-up with Fleeks today, right? And I was like, nope. And apparently you didn't know either.
No, I had no idea. And it's funny, I did like think of it in passing yesterday while driving. The problem is I think of everything while driving, and then I think, oh, you know, like let me, you know, send off a text when I get home, and then by the time you get home, you forget.
It's gone.
So I thought about it in the car, never again. And then when you told me, like, by the way, doing the warm-up show with me, I'm like, oh, okay. Good
and
to
I
know.
Only told you because Jerry told me, or else I would have been like, where's Al?
Well, listen, we've been here before. Why I found out one time at like 4:59. Hey, by the way, this is you when I'm preparing to, you know, get ready for Boomer to come in and record.
That'd be like when, you know, Craig was here and he used to tell whoever was producing for him, whether it was Al or Lou Gower, he'd be like, hey, just get the president on the phone, will you? Like, it's just very matter of fact. No big deal. In any event, we are here on a Wednesday morning. And let me say first, before we go down another path, and you can chime in as well, I will admit I did not get to see any of this game because I was commuting home from another job. But congrats to Wagner. They get the win. They hold on against Howard last night. First NCAA tournament victory, as you heard from Marco there in the update. So very cool that they will at least live to see another day, except now you got to face North Carolina in Charlotte tomorrow afternoon.
I mean, listen, you would say this is the end of the road for Wagner, but we just saw FDU a year ago knock off Purdue.
Yeah.
North Carolina a little more formidable than Purdue every March. North Carolina knows how to win in the tournament. Purdue does not, but even if it does end tomorrow, great to get the first win in the NCAA tournament. I'm sure the Wagner community had a blast last night. They'll be celebrating today, as they should, for smaller schools to get these kind of opportunities.
Sure.
This is what March in the tournament is all about,
and especially
at least early on.
For them getting this far with just the seven healthy players, which I know has been a storyline as they made their run through the NEC tournament and now getting the victory last night. So very cool for them, and congratulations to the school, the team, the alumni, our buddy Joey Waller, right on down
maybe,
the line.
Maybe they can make a long run and match up with their former head coach in the Final Four. We've seen weird in March before.
That would be fun. That would be fun
and
indeed.
If you think that'll happen, go make the bet on FanDuel. You'll never have to work another day in your life.
That's an excellent point. But we will focus in here in this first segment. I was about coming up on 24 hours ago or so that actually might have been the 9 o'clock segment yesterday. Maybe it was 8. It's really irrelevant. I came in here and set up the whole Taylor Ham egg and cheese story with NYJ Matt and the Mike Williams Jets visit with Jerry and Boomer. And they both looked at me like I had 17 heads. They were just like, okay, who cares? And that became the storyline from yesterday, right on through Mike Williams signing the contract, taking a bite of said sandwich, giving credit to NYJ Matt, and then going to the Nets game where the Nets even picked up on the fun and brought him a bag with a new sandwich, and it just became the theme for the day. Little did we know, a little DoorDash order at whatever time it was in the morning from the Morristown Diner would set the stage for some fun yesterday.
I mean, it was just a moment. The guy, Matt, I don't know his last name, but
Does anybody?
Very, very active on Twitter. I've seen his tweets before.
Yeah.
NYJ Matt, like he's big
30,000 followers or something.
Right. And he's one of those people. I like this as a Jets fan myself. And this doesn't really exist in the Jet fan community, but he tries to be optimistic while still grounded in reality. Team hasn't made the playoffs in 13 years, but trying to be like optimistic and have some fun with being a football fan. You know, sports supposed to be about fun. So he just sends off this little tweet that starts to, you know, make waves in like the Jets Twitter
picked
community.
Picked up some steam quickly.
And you give credit to the Jets social team because they fully embraced it. It blew up. They have Mike Williams as a part of it. Now they're tweeting about it, making jokes about it before he comes in for the meeting or
right.
before we know that he's there, before he signs. And then when it's capped off with the video of him taking a bite, giving it his thumbs up. I mean, this is something that it'll be fun for a couple days. Jets fans might remember it, but for this guy, Matt, this is something that, you know, you had some fun with a tweet on Sunday, like a little bit before the visit. This is something we talk about Wagner and how those guys are going to remember last night's win for the rest of their lives. This guy, Matt's going to remember this for the rest of his life. Like, this is whatever, like, iconic, I don't know where, iconic social media moments. Like, I remember the day with the llamas on the run and is it black and blue or gold and yellow?
Oh, yeah.
Like, this was not to that scale. That went almost worldwide. But this is, like, locally and in the sports world. Like, you saw, I mean, SportsCenter, I think ESPN was talking about this.
Everywhere. I mean, it was all over the place.
You talked about it on the morning show.
I did. I mean, right over their heads. Maybe we'll get a little bit more of a reaction to it today because, again, it really it got picked up and ran with. It's too early for me to figure that out. All throughout the day yesterday, and I was kind of tracking it because after I left here, I went to the other job and I had to be locked in on what was going on and Twitter, social media, and I just couldn't believe that it just kept going and going and going to the point where the Jets made the picture of the sandwich their Twitter.
Right, when they put it, I saw that Twitter, 3,000 retweets, yeah. And it's, oh, you got 3,000, you guys are going to clear this easy. And when I checked right after they made it, their picture was at 4,000. And of course, you know, this is the Jet fan in me, is as this is going on throughout the day and people are starting to embrace the sandwich and share it, I'm thinking, I mean, if they don't sign Mike,
right.
If he walks out
leave.
Of the building without a deal and ends up signing with the Panthers or the Steelers, there's just another thing in life, breakfast sandwiches, that the Jets are going to ruin. And it's not the guy Matt's fault, but it's the Jet. And then you get the news, just this is something that, from a football standpoint, the Jets haven't done. They've been a team that the last couple of years, all right, this guy's scheduled for a visit after he visits this team, never leaves that team's building. For the Jets to finally be the team, hey, they targeted a guy, they had the first visit, they locked it down. I mean, this is, in the last few days, especially starting Friday with Tyron Smith, this is a couple of days Jets fans are not used to. So they're having the success from an offseason standpoint. Again, doesn't mean anything on the field yet.
Right.
But you're having that success in football terms, and then yesterday they gave you a real opportunity. A credit to not just NYJ Matt, but the Jets social team for realizing this is something that we can just have a lot of fun with, and everybody, you know, that's what social media, I think, was supposed to be for originally. Everybody just have fun,
yeah.
Making jokes. It's harmless. Everybody seems to be in a good mood, and it was that yesterday with the whole sandwich.
One more thing on that before we get more into the football side of it and what it means for the Jets and the roster and the outlook for the upcoming season. Maybe you can help me with this, being the big Jet fan that you are. So this thing spreads like wildfire, and I was on NYJ Matt's Twitter page this morning just looking at some of the things he retweeted or quote tweeted or whatever you want to call it. What is the Vinny Pasquantino connection to NYJ Matt or the Jets? Like, I looked him up. Okay, Royals first baseman, came up and kind of made a name for himself a little bit, whatever, two seasons ago. I'm like, looked him up. He's from Richmond. He played, I think, college ball in Virginia. Like, how does that? And I checked. It was a verified account with like 20,000 followers. So it seems like the real Kansas City Royal. What the heck is that?
That I have no idea. Somebody's going to have
so
to
random.
Somebody's gonna have to tweet it, one of us, and maybe we'll see it before the end of the show. Maybe he's got some kind of family ties. I mean, you spent some time in Virginia. You're still a New Yorker.
Yeah,
you're a local
fan.
I mean,
that is true. But
maybe.
He was like laying roses, basically throwing a bouquet at NYJ Matt's feet. And I'm like, what's the connection here? Maybe a buddy or something?
Maybe
I don't know.
Maybe he's a breakfast sandwich guy. I don't know. Maybe it's not even the Jets angle.
Shout out NYJ Matt. If you ever had a Taylor ham, and then he put in parentheses, I say pork roll.
See, I was waiting the whole time to say that.
Right.
And where we grew up around the same area, pork roll in Manalapan.
See, now, yes, you're right. Now, I never had a strong take on this because I was always a bacon, egg, and cheese guy. I never went the either Taylor ham or pork roll route, so I don't get as worked up about it. Now, if you want to see me fired up, tell me there's not a Central Jersey, which I know I won't have that argument with you because we both grew up in that area.
Listen, but you and I are both, yeah. We're not from North Jersey.
That's
and
right.
We are definitely not from South
no
Jersey.
Shot, no
we
shot.
We are Central Jersey.
So anyway, Pasquantino basically chiming in on the sandwich side of things and just giving credit to this NYJ Matt. What a story. Can't believe he got him to sign, blah, 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 blah. So I don't know. It was just wild. A wild story,
but
wild
that's
situation.
That's how wide-ranging it was. I mean, maybe he just had ESPN on his TV.
I guess.
After whatever workout they did at spring training
very
yesterday. And he saw it and thought this is a – like, that's how – it is so fun to see, you know, with all the nonsense we hear about Daly and all the miserable stuff out there, to see something just, like, good-hearted and fun be this viral moment for a day where, you know, it's not everybody's talking about the upcoming election or politics or whatever's going on in the world, or even the selection committee completely spitting the bid
right.
For a couple hours. It was just, we're talking about a breakfast sandwich and the Jets and a DoorDash order. And it was just fun.
Tremendous. It's what we all live for, right? And by the way, thanks to the selection committee for getting Virginia in there. That was a great watch. I didn't watch it, but I mean, what a disgrace. Get hammered. What do they have, like 25 points, 28 minutes into the game.
I wrote it down somewhere. They had at one point the last 9:20 of the first half without a point, the last 10 and a half minutes without a field goal.
Brutal.
And it ultimately stretched like over 13 minutes between field goals. You know, normally when there's something that fans have outrage over, a lot of times that team ends up playing a game in the tournament. This is just a selection committee, not all things in sports. And all right, the committee ends up getting validated a little bit. Maybe the fans shouldn't have been screaming. This was not that. This is everybody
and
who
media
was,
too, because it's a first four
and they,
game.
And they weren't just bad. They were an abomination.
Like
they were horrible. They have 14 points at halftime of an NCAA tournament game. Like Wagner and Howard looked infinitely better than Virginia did. So to see this team that everybody identified, you know, whether you wanted Seton Hall in or St. John's or Pittsburgh or any team out there, Indiana State for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, everybody said, well, this Virginia team doesn't belong. And they proved that they had absolutely no business being in that game.
What a bizarre, what is it, 5 years or so they've had, like tournament history-wise, when you consider the game against UMBC.
Well, and that 2 years especially is the weirdest 2 years you could have.
I mean, I get it. And they talked, I guess, after losing last night that they're going to have to look at their system. I mean, from a viewing standpoint, we know it's like watching paint dry.
Well,
so.
Listen, it's a great theory. You know, the object of basketball is to put the ball into the hoop. And Virginia doesn't put the ball in the hoop. So, you know, it's like a baseball team. If you're not scoring runs, you're averaging one run a game, you might want to look at your system and how you're hitting. Or if you're a football team with an anemic offense, say the New York Jets, almost every year of their history, you might want to look into getting a quarterback, a couple wide receivers, and a running back. Because when the object of the game is to put points on the board and you don't score points, yeah, your system probably needs some work.
Makes it kind of hard. Makes me think back to that. And I'm sure it was taken out of context, but I love, and you can still find it on YouTube from years ago, Trent Dilfer on whatever it was. I don't know if it was Primetime or Countdown or whatever. And he dead serious looks at the camera and goes, you can't lose in the NFL and still win. It's like, okay.
Listen, not wrong.
Yeah, not wrong. Maybe a little bit simplistic, but definitely not wrong. In any event, I do want to dive into the football side of the Mike Williams signing with you. We'll do that on the other side. We've got to hit our first break of the show here. We had our fun. We got our sandwich talk out of the way. A little NCAA tournament.
Sandwich.
Sandwich.
I was waiting
sandwich.
For that. Now, did Eddie do that all the time yesterday when
no,
it first got brought
because
up?
Because when I brought it up to them, they weren't all that interested. It didn't really go anywhere.
I mean, that was anytime I hear anything about a sandwich. Sandwich. That's my first thought.
The sandwich, yes. Sandwich. So I'm sure we'll hear that quite a bit throughout the course of the morning. All right, you got, I guess, what do we call it? I'm in for Jerry, you're in for Al. That's really the case. You got CeeLo. What did we call this? Flea-Lo when we did this for, right?
That
we had that
right.
One week when we did that in the summer.
We had a couple ideas, but maybe Flea-Lo is what we stuck with.
It didn't quite take
it's
off.
It's like 5-6 months ago at this point.
I don't
point.
Think Boomer liked it much, so maybe we just kicked that to the curb and we go with CeeLo and Fleegs and CeeLo. In any event, we're off and running here on a Wednesday morning warm-up on The Fan. Coming right back.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, 5:23 on a Wednesday morning, a warm-up show edition, of course, going to the top of the hour to be Jerry and Boomer, or Boomer and Jerry, whatever order you want to put that in. You got CeeLo in for Jerry and the great Mike Fliegelman sitting in for Al Dukes this morning, and he's got his Jet sweatshirt on, pumped up, Mike Williams signing the one-year contract. So look, on paper, makes a ton of sense, as Carlin would say, the Jets were looking for that established veteran wideout to put opposite Garrett Wilson. Look, he has injury concerns. We know that. But at least these guys the Jets are bringing aboard fall in line with sort of this short-term outlook you've got in this window right now with Aaron Rodgers, whether it's Tyron Smith on a one-year deal. This is a one-year deal, and you can say up to $15 million as much as you want. We know that's probably going to be heavily incentive-driven, probably be a lower number. So I know Evan was calling him Napping Joe early in free agency, Joe Douglas, but they've come on pretty strong here over the course of the last week or so in terms of addressing some of the needs and the holes in the roster.
I mean, this is – I don't know how you can't praise – Joe Douglas effusively for what he's done the last few days. And yes, of course, there are players with injury concerns. Tyron Smith, Mike Williams, Aaron Rodgers technically is one now coming off the Achilles. Why I love it from a Jets perspective is if they're right about these guys, if they're healthy, if it works, then it can work to the extent that you win a Super Bowl. This isn't, well, if it works, they're a playoff contender and maybe can win 10, 11 games and, you know, give you a fun season. It's if things work out to the maximum of their potential, they're one of the small handful of teams that can win a championship. And after so many Jets off seasons where, you know, they're signing guys with injury concerns to be one piece when you need four more, and it's like, okay, well, even if this guy hits his ceiling, what's the team going to do? This is now a situation where if Mike Williams is healthy and the player that he's been whenever he's been on the field in his career, and if Tyron Smith is healthy and the player he's been every time he's been on the field in a 13-year career with Aaron Rodgers, with Garrett Wilson, with Breece Hall, I mean, you have the makings of an offense that could be one of the top 10 or 5 in the league. We already know the Jets have a top 5 defense, and that's a team that can make a run. They're in a tough conference. The Chiefs are still there and better than everybody, but that's why I love it from the Jets' perspective is this. If it works, it is a real Super Bowl contender, not just, maybe they could win 8-9 games.
You were all surprised. Maybe I know in free agency at this stage doesn't always really work this way at all, especially because we haven't gotten into like OTAs or even off-season conditioning or anything like that. But a guy coming off a torn ACL, like obviously they do the medicals and the physical and so on and so forth for him to officially put pen to paper and sign the deal. Like any concern about, well, would have been nice to get like a workout in, see where he's at, that sort of thing. Because it was week 3 last year, so in theory it's enough time that he should have recovered, but a guy who's numbers like, you know, yards per catch had already started to decline a little bit. Now he's got an ACL. He's about to turn 30. I mean, it's a one-year deal, so who cares? You know, but from that standpoint of, well, hey, we want to put somebody legitimate and reliable across from Garrett Wilson, and we haven't seen the guy on the field for a while now, and he is coming off a significant injury.
Yeah, you'd probably like to, but I'm sure they did some kind of, you know, looking at him. He'll take a physical, so there's something there. That, or I guess because he signed, he took the physical.
So, I mean, the physical, I think, is done in order for him to actually sign the contract. Yeah.
So, like, I don't think they would have signed the deal if they thought there were any major red flags there.
Yeah.
It's, and like you said, because it's a 1 year deal, they're banking on the potential here, knowing that this is 1 year, maybe two. I know Rodgers has talked about 3-4, but
yeah,
I think if
you're
the Jets, you have to, you're thinking about two max, but really doing everything you possibly can in this 1 year before you have to worry about extensions for any of your young superstars, before you have to worry about some cap hits and dead cap that's going to come and impact the team next year. So even if, you know, they're slightly worried, at least from my perspective as a Jets fan, I don't care because it's, listen, everything you could possibly do in this 1 year, try to win. It should have been a 2 year window. It got knocked down to one because of Rodgers tearing his Achilles, but do everything you possibly can to win this year, because this isn't a team that's built, you know, the Jets 3-4 years ago were building with an eye towards the future. Future is here. Future is right now.
Yes.
It's this upcoming season. Anything else after that, one, don't worry. I don't worry as a fan, too, if you're Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh. And this is why I think Jets fans were on Joe Douglas at the start of free agency period. Like, hey, Joe, if you don't make the playoffs and have some kind of run
this year,
you're not making these decisions next year. So ultimately, the Jets ended up having that kind of offseason and free agency period, and it's one that I fully support. It's what they need. For every organization's in a different spot. The Giants needed to hit reset and start building for the future. The Jets are in a spot where it's Super Bowl this year.
And as is always or often the case with these free agent contracts, you wait to see how it's structured, right?
It's
you
so fugazi.
Up to $15 million. We heard up to $20 million with Tyron Smith, and those numbers came out yesterday. And it's basically $6.5 million fully guaranteed and a lot of other things tied to incentives. So I would imagine similar with Williams, 15 max. I'm thinking as far as guaranteed money, probably same ballpark, I would think, is what Tyron Smith got.
I mean, you would definitely think
5 to 7 range.
Half of that at the most. Yeah. So 7.5 at the most. And a part of it's because they both have injury concerns. But yeah, even Tyron Smith was an all-pro, second-team all-pro last year. Started 13 games plus the playoffs. What Jets fans and Jets haters, because you know, everybody loves to mock the Jets, and it's easy, and 99% of it they deserve. You have to acknowledge that the Jets right now, as much as we may disagree with a lot of the stuff he says off the field, does off the field, some of the personality, the Jets are a destination because of Aaron Rodgers, because of Garrett Wilson, Breece Hall, Sauce Gardner, C.J. Mosley. Like, that's something that, I mean, the Jets were a disaster when Joe Douglas took over. It probably took a little bit longer than Joe Douglas and Woody Johnson and any Jets fan would have liked for them to get to this point. But they are there now where, you know, again, I mentioned last segment, the players, Odell Beckham Jr. was supposed to come in and potentially sign. He never made it there. Calais Campbell is somebody who was supposed to visit with the Jets. The Falcons end up locking him up. There have been players over the years that never made it to the Jets. Anthony Barr was a player that agreed to a deal with the Jets and then went back on it.
That's not the case right now. Was a little different.
Right, where he just used the Jets to get a better situation. That's not the case right now. It doesn't mean they're going to win on the field, but they're one of a handful of teams where players are looking at and saying, all right, I can win there and I can, you know, maximize my situation in a one-year bet on myself gamble. This is not just a good spot for the team, but it's a good spot for me. And that is extremely rare for the New York Jets.
All right, so here we are now. They've addressed on paper the offensive line. They've got their 5 starters. You got Tyrod Taylor to back up Rodgers. You got Williams opposite Garrett Wilson. Obviously, Breece Hall's there already. So it gives them options and flexibility as far as what they want to do in the draft. And we can't predict what's going to happen ahead of them. But as it stands this morning, right now, you'd like to see them go where? Is it Brock Bowers?
Still offensive tackle, but I tell you, Cee, as a big college football fan, you know, I'm one of those lunatics that's inside in the fall watching.
I don't know. Like
Eddie, we love college football. And I know Eddie probably thinks this too from how much he watches. Brock Bowers is a special player. This isn't just, one of the top tight ends of the class is going that high. This is, there are game-changing tight ends that transform offenses. Look at what Sam Laporta did for the Lions and Jared Goff. Look what Kittle has meant to the Niners in his tenure. Patrick Mahomes lost all of his wide receivers. It didn't matter in part because he had Travis Kelce. There are game changers at that position. As much as I like Conklin, and I've been a big Jeremy Rucker guy, the local kid, loved him at Ohio State, thought he was undervalued in an offense that just didn't need him because they had C.J. Stroud and great
all
running
wide
game.
Receivers.
And then three of the top 10, 15 wide receivers in the NFL. As much as I believe in that group, Brock Bowers is one of those, hey, this kid is special. It can really just blow the ceiling off of what this Jets offense can be and make it, I hate the word elite, but it's the one that is popping into my head right now. I'd be happy if they took a tackle because, Smith is a one-year deal. Moses is older.
Right.
I'd be fine with that. It's probably the smart long-term decision. But as I'm thinking, hey, let's just push all the chips in, worry about the rest later. Brock Bowers is really tempting.
Yeah, and not to overstate it, but this is like a 12-year Hall of Fame kind of guy.
Wow.
Yeah, like I almost hate, because I hate putting that kind of pressure on these guys. He's the gold jacket kind of player.
Yeah.
But he looks every bit the part of that.
And it's amazing every year we go, we get further and further away from it. And he was not a game breaker, but the last true number one legit tight end they had, unless I'm forgetting somebody, was Dustin Keller, correct?
It's been a very long time. Yeah.
I mean, he was good. I'm not saying, this guy, Bowers seems more dynamic than that. But, you think about today's NFL and that security blanket and the tight end position.
Yeah, they certainly haven't had someone in this era of what tight ends have been really since. No. I mean, you can even think back to, Peyton Manning uses tight ends a lot. But really when Gronk and Aaron Hernandez changed the game for the Patriots.
Antonio
Gronk
Gates.
Specifically, the Tony Gonzalez's of the world. They haven't had a player even reach, scratch the surface of that kind of talent at the position. And Brock Bowers is that plug and play. He can block as well, so you don't have to worry about losing a lot there. He's a guy from week one. Again, the easiest comparison is what Sam Laporta did last year with the Lions. Steps on the field right away, and he's one of the top 5 to 10 tight ends in the game with the potential to be one of the number one or two in the league.
And Fleegs, now, I was very excited about Kyle Pitts out of Florida. I don't know if that's more of a Falcons situation.
Seems like a Falcons situation.
I think it's a Falcons situation. But you're right. He's the last one that kind of came out with this kind of hype around him. Yeah, he went early.
Number four, I think.
But I always looked at that as a Falcons situation. Like, yeah. Kyle Pitts is going to be one of those guys this year when people are betting on player props or in fantasy drafts. They're going to be looking at Kyle Pitts of
Kirk Cousins
going from Desmond Ritter throwing the ball to you or trying to throw the ball to you to Kirk Cousins actually throwing the ball your way.
Yeah, for sure.
But yes, Eddie's right. The last player maybe with this kind of hype, it didn't work out. But again, that was a bad situation.
He's a couple years in. It's not like we've written his NFL story in full.
And he hasn't been terrible. He just hasn't put up the numbers that anybody expected.
Yeah, they were not using him sometimes. Bijan Robinson, to an extent, last year, I would say more traction than Pitts got, especially as the year went along. But there were
both of them had issues where
Falcons
fans are saying, why are these guys...
Or fantasy owners.
Not right. Why are they not the focal point of the offense? Not only are they the talents, they're both guys you spend top 10 picks on in the draft, but Bowers would come to a situation with the Jets where they have two legitimate wide receivers. One is definitely a number one. One, there are teams that kind of have believed over the years he could be the one. They have a superstar running back, and they have a Hall of Fame quarterback. So the pressure wouldn't be there right away, and he can just kind of find his way within that offense. It's extremely tempting, but it's also, I mean, I could have never imagined even a week ago, as much as I'm a Joe Douglas guy, that the Jets could have been in a spot where they have plugged all of the, they needed three starters on the offensive line and a number two receiver. The thought was, okay, well, we'll see. Whichever one they don't sign will be clearly where they're intending to go in the draft, and now they can pick either one if a receiver they like falls. So Daniel Jeremiah had a mock yesterday. This was before Mike Williams signed, where he had them trading 10 and a future two to move up to 5 for Marvin Harrison Jr.
I saw that.
Who I think is another one of those kind of gold jacket instant talents right away, one of the top 10, 15 receivers in the league. They can now trade down, which is something that wasn't an option. It's now going to be where it could have been a really nerve-wracking month and a half for Jets fans. Now it's a lot of fun because now it's possibilities, and now that, unless they take another pass rusher, which I doubt, or a defensive tackle, then it seems like they can't do a lot of wrong in the first round, whether it's tackle, Bowers, receiver that falls, or they trade down. I think Jets fans will be happy no matter what, and that is the rarest feeling in the world.
Real quick, off the defense, I know about Bryce Huff. I know about Jordan Whitehead. Any other key guys that they've lost so far in free agency that I'm forgetting or missing?
The Quentin Jefferson, but they seem like they've replaced him with Kinlaw. Ashton Davis might not return if he can get a starting job.
But nothing of the main pieces.
No, not like the corners
it's
are still
Huff
there.
And Whitehead.
They've actually added to that quarterback room.
Because I'm just thinking, I could see they're going to get the offense figured out now, and the defense, as good as it's been the last 2 years, you don't want to see them take a step back. The pressure's on now, right? We have our questions about Saleh. But you can see that. You can see
the magnifier. It is solely on him right now.
Yeah, but from a head coach standpoint and an overall team standpoint, for sure. But if they are going to score points and be a legit offense and be a playoff contender, that you can't fall back on the, well, the defense is holding them in the game. If it's late in the game and they give up a drive or a big score,
the thing with the defense has been the last couple of years. Well, they need to play with a lead so they can unleash that pass rush. All right, well, now if you have a lead, they better deliver on that promise. And I'm sure they'll still look to add one. They were supposed to bring in Clowney for a visit. Maybe it's him.
Is that happening today or not?
I heard it was happening early this week, so maybe they got Mike Williams out of the way. Now Clowney will be today.
All right.
Whether it's later in the draft or something else, they're going to have to add a couple of pieces to the defense. They'll have to replace White. They'll have to add another safety. They're bringing Chuck Clark back, who missed the season last year with an injury. But it wasn't like the holes were not as glaring as what existed on the offense.
Of course. Right. When you come off a year
where there were
four
out of 11 in a starting lineup.
All right, well, it's at least for now, as all we can do in March, it's fun and exciting as they plug some of those holes. So that's a fun story for this morning. We'll step aside. We got a little bit more to do here on the warm-up show, including live baseball coming up at the top of the hour, believe it or not. That'll be fun to monitor. You got CeeLo and Fleegs in for Jerry and Al. Jerry and Boomer coming up at the top of the hour here on The Fan. Dun, 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 dun. Good morning. Welcome back. It's the Pinch Hitters warm-up show here on a Wednesday. You get CeeLo in for Jerry, Mike Fliegelman in for Al Dukes. It'll be Boomer and Jerry coming up at the top of the hour here this morning. And we are inside 15 minutes to, if you actually believe or count this, the start of the 2024 baseball season. Dodgers and Padres on the field in Seoul, South Korea, getting set for the first of two games they'll play before coming back to the States and diving back into their exhibition schedule before additional regular season games. Very strange vibe and dynamic this year.
I'm trying to remember when the Mets started overseas, because I was young. I remember the Agbayani home run. Did they go back to exhibition games
they
after that?
They very well might have.
I don't think they did.
I couldn't tell you. But.
I want to say that they did have like some sort of a...
Like a tune-up?
Yeah. I don't know if it was against the college, if it was in the intra-squad, if it was what it was.
Sometimes the left-behind guys have to get their reps.
And, I remember we did I forget what...
That's crazy. You were here that day.
What midday iteration?
He's been here many days since.
I mean, what year was this? When they started in
2000. I was in third grade. I remember my teacher, Miss Carr, we had whatever special gym or whatever, went away from the class. We came back and she told me what was going on.
What year is this now?
2000.
Yeah, against the Cubbies, right?
Yeah, because it was a week before I was leaving the school. We were moving to New Jersey. I was still in Brooklyn. So I was.
And it was two games.
Like one foot out the door. It was a two game series, yeah.
Yeah. And I remember we did a midday show. I think it was Mac and Susan at the time. I think Russ and Steve were over, but whatever. We were at the ESPN zone doing a live
Times Square.
Broadcast.
I remember that.
Wow. I'm reacting to you.
That was a fun reaction. Going there as a kid, that was just like a whirlwind. But it's also funny to think because, you know, those games started probably around 5-6 o'clock Eastern time. If you're a Padres fan or a Dodgers fan, these games are starting at 3 o'clock local time.
Yeah.
That's rough.
That's a tough. That's true.
And I can't remember if we preempted Imus or if, you know, I think we actually did Imus, but like to the national audience because he was syndicated, obviously. And I think we did the show there pre and post or something. It was some crazy situation.
You guys got me down the rabbit. I'm actually.
That had to be. There's no like. That, there's no way that was fun for Chernoff to program around that.
No.
Hate that.
It was a disaster.
No. I'm looking at the 2000 spring training schedule here. I don't know why I'm wasting my time on that.
You got to love the internet. Because there was a time where it just did this happen? Nobody knows. We'll never find out.
I'm seeing Mets, Astros, Port St. Lucie, March 23rd. I don't see the Mets after that. So maybe not.
Eddie's right. Maybe they did like one of those, like they had a local college in, or they just did an intra-squad game at Shea. Or maybe they went right into, you know, there wasn't as much probably thought about, oh, well, the travel, the players need 6 days off to readjust their body clocks. God forbid they go right back to playing a game in a couple days. So maybe they just went right back to, listen, if that's what it was for the Mets, bring that back because it worked.
I'm going to guess no, because they played those two games overseas on a Wednesday and a Thursday. And then they were back playing on Monday. So I'd imagine by the time they traveled back.
On the road Monday or
get
home?
Home.
And so, again, maybe it must have been like an intra-squad or maybe a college, not an official spring training game.
Right, exactly.
Just something to keep them active. But it's weird because we're watching it now. They're doing the introductions.
Yeah.
So you know, now it's the Dodgers one by one
for the folks there in Seoul.
But they're going to do this again. The Padres are the quote unquote home team for this game. They're going to do this again when they're in San Diego.
Of
they're going to do it for the Dodgers in L.A.
Yes, yes.
Well, so you got to do all the pomp and circumstances three times.
But the pomp and circumstance in this case is for the crowd there locally. Plus, you've got on the Padres, Ha-Sung Kim is from Seoul.
Listen, during the break, we were talking about this, and it's good that we came back because it was dangerous for me. I was throwing bets on it for this game while we were in the last
talking
break.
Talking about that. The odds on a Tyler Wade home run this morning.
He's got the longest odds on the board. No picture on FanDuel.
Rightfully so.
But Ha-Sung Kim had the two home run game in a couple days ago. So bet him to hit a home run. It was plus 630 or 650.
Absolutely. And Tyler Glasnow is making his Dodgers debut overseas here. It's a little bit of a bizarre dynamic, but that's okay. It's on. Usually we don't get a chance to watch live sports here during the morning show outside of, you know, like British Open.
Olympics,
tennis
events.
We had
the World Cup, which I do not care about whatsoever.
Right, right.
This is
mainstream baseball here.
That I love watching, and Eddie and I will have it on and be keeping an eye on it during the entire show.
I think we all will.
That's fun.
Although, you mean I have to turn off Telemundo?
Oh, man, we won't be keeping an eye on it.
You only have the one TV in there?
We have two, but one's on the return.
Ah, got it. Well, we'll keep you guys informed.
I can sacrifice it.
Yeah, that's okay.
And but this watching baseball from Korea has given me bad flashbacks.
Yeah, that was because height of the pandemic when we were working here.
Yes.
Eddie and I were here, so
KBO.
We had on the TVs at the end of my shift, beginning of his, or when I filled in for him. Yeah, Korean baseball when we were the only people in the building.
Yeah, I could see where that's a little PTSD for you guys.
Yeah, it really actually is. I'm getting chills.
By the way, it's good to see these guys on the field and that all is well. I don't know if you saw this through the night. They had a bomb threat.
No, I did not.
Yeah,
see that.
So they had police come in and search I don't know how to pronounce the name, but the Sky Dome there in Seoul. So they had 150 police officers, dogs, X-ray detectors, and other equipment searching the stadium. Apparently, there was a threat targeting Ohtani. So nothing came of that, which is good. And they were able to, you know, get this game off the ground here. And obviously, the fans are in the building. Like you said, they're going through the introductions. And we'll have first pitch, as they say, in less than 10 minutes.
I made the switch, Fleeks.
Oh, awesome, Eddie. Thank you. We're all on the record. Even if you root for one of these teams, this is not opening day.
No. It's
we don't even like calling it opening day if two teams started on Sunday Night Baseball and the rest started Monday.
Yeah, no, it's not opening day.
I hated calling Sunday opening day.
It's not opening day. It's a showcase for the folks overseas there, which is great. I mean, they're into it. Building's full. You got a lot of people wearing Padre and Dodger hats.
Yeah, it looks like a big crowd.
So that's what you want, which is the whole idea of Major League Baseball going there. But you're right. When the Padres open up at Petco and the Dodgers open up in Chavez Ravine, they will go through all of this, maybe minus the fireworks that we're seeing right now and the sparks that they're setting
fireworks
off
indoors
inside the building. Yeah,
not ever the best idea.
They're like,
maybe
more
they're
like
just
sparklers. Yeah, they're not shooting them up towards the roof or anything like
Listen,
that.
Listen, I've seen people at the end of the wedding, the sparklers. I've seen some people who had maybe a little too much to drink almost, you know, start a fire with those things. So you always want to be careful.
I believe it. All right, we got to step aside. We got an Odyssey Sports Minute with Amy Lawrence and Fleegs. Usually we tell Al what percentage chance Eddie is giving him of guessing what it is. With you in the seat, this is the highest number I've seen. He's put it at 50% for you here this morning.
I'm going to say Amy went with Virginia getting destroyed.
It's the dynamic duo of Al and Jerry, the superheroes of WFAN.
All right, here we go. Wrapping it up. Wednesday morning warm-up, CeeLo and Fleegs, and they're wrapping up the anthems there in South Korea. Pulled up the audio during the break there. Both the same singer for our national anthem as well as the South Korean anthem. Beautiful voice. She sounded like she did a tremendous job.
Yeah, sounded good. And I guess over there in South Korea, you got to learn English and be able to sing the Star-Spangled Banner.
Yeah, she nailed it. She was on top of it. It sounded good. So
no fights with you guys this morning. Nobody got up. Nobody left the studio. Nobody got into each other's face over fighting about something stupid.
No, well, we both agree that Central Jersey is real. We're from there. Pork roll, not Taylor ham. So we're good to go.
We have a lot in common, even though we don't root for all the same teams. Plus, it's a happy morning for Fleegs. He's got Mike Williams on the roster now. You know, he's got the Jets sweatshirt on.
Beautiful
he's good
morning.
To go.
The only thing I will say, and we're going to get into it, you know, your boy Joe Douglas has two main signings and two most important signings on offense are coming off of significant injuries and have both been injury prone in their careers.
It's worrisome, but I love the potential. I want to win a Super Bowl, Boomer.
So the Jets are winning the offseason once again.
They rarely win the offseason, though.
Like they won last year.
That's once. I've been around over 30 years. They don't win anything. I'll take winning an offseason.
Well, all right. I'm just saying, I hope they do win, and I hope these guys stay healthy, and I hope that Joe Douglas has got the right guys here.
And if that's the case, he'll be around for a long time, so I hope for that, too.
WFAN. WFAN-FM. WFAN-FM HD1, New York. Always live on the Free Odyssey app.